Welcome to the official podcast of the Milwaukee Brewers. This is Brewers on Tap.
Here's the pitch. A curveball! Drilled to deep left. Gonna get way, way, way over here and gone for dear. And they have tied it at four. Wow!
Now it's time to tap the keg with Lane Grindle.
Hello and welcome to episode number 93 of Brewers on Tap. Lane Grindle with you from Miller Park as the Brewers continuing this homestand after a series against the Cubs this weekend and, of course, this Cardinals series before heading back out on the road. The Brewers currently sitting at 56-52 on the year and still right in the mix in the NL Central. A couple of wins this past week, one against the Chicago Cubs over the weekend and off to a good start in the Cardinals series with a win over St. Louis. Well, of course, the trade deadline has come and gone, at least the non-waiver trade deadline has come and gone. That ended on Monday afternoon, and the Brewers making one more move. We told you about the Anthony Swarzak move a week ago that the Brewers had made with the Chicago White Sox. Brewers made another deal on Monday by acquiring and really reacquiring right-handed relief pitcher Jeremy Jeffress. He comes to the Brewers, of course, after spending most of the last couple of years with the Milwaukee Brewers. The Brewers sent him out in the Jonathan Lucroy trade last year to the Texas Rangers for Lewis Brinson, Luis Ortiz, and Ryan Cordell. Now they get Jeffress back. They sent Taylor Scott to the Texas Rangers in the process. Kirk Nieuwenhuis has been designated for assignment. Junior Guerra has been optioned. Wei-Chung Wong is back on the 25-man roster for the first time since 2014. And Keon Broxton has been brought back up to the big league club as well and started on Tuesday night in center field for the Brewers. Here's what we have coming up for you on episode number 93. We're going to let you listen in on the Hall of Fame induction speech of Commissioner Bud Selig, former Brewers owner, and we're also going to talk with new Brewer Anthony Swarzak. You're going to hear from him about being a late-inning leverage guy now with this Brewers team in the middle of a playoff chase. That's all coming up. Let's jump right into it, and let's break it down with Alan H. Selig.
Let's break it down.
Thank you, Jane, Jeff. I also want to take this opportunity to thank Whitney and John and everybody else in the Hall of Fame staff. You have been remarkable. The Hall of Fame is the soul of baseball and reaffirms its beauty and timelessness. Thanks to your vision, your leadership, and your ability to tell our stories in exhibits and words, the Hall of Fame is a baseball treasure. Congratulations to you, Tim, Pudge, and Jeff. You've earned your place amongst the legends of the game, and I'm proud to be part of your class and forever connected with you. And congratulations to my friend John Schuerholz. We've known one another for half a century. There's no one, I or anyone in baseball, hold in higher esteem. As countless people have said in the past few months, you've set the standard we all strive to achieve. From a personal standpoint, I will be forever indebted to you for all the assignments you accepted over the years. You poured your heart into them. Your integrity and your intelligence have enriched baseball for these past 50 years. To Commissioner Rob Manfred, my friend, my associate, for these past 27 years, I thank you. I thank you for your wise counsel and for the great work that you did to help baseball reach the heights it enjoys today. As commissioner these past 2.5 years, your vision to grow the game, engage more young people, extend the reach of our sport around the world will lead our great game to new heights. And finally, to these Hall of Famers, I am honored to be in your presence. On your shoulders, this game became part of the fabric of our country, and we are forever indebted to you. For so many years, I sat right behind where I stand now and watched as each new member would stand here and deliver remarks with a kind of emotion that comes with great happiness and fulfillment. Now, as I stand here at this moment, I am humbled. I am deeply honored to receive baseball's highest honor. I stand here amongst many friends, including the great Henry Aaron, my friend of 59 years, and I must say, one of the best, most decent, and dignified people that I have ever known. I had become friends with Henry Aaron and other members of the Milwaukee Braves in the late 1950s. I remember once when the team was leaving on a road trip, first baseman Frank Torrey asked if I'd keep an eye on his little brother while he was gone. Yes, that's when I met Joe Torrey. We have been friends ever since. Joe, you turned out okay, and he'd be proud. To see my guys here, Robin Yount, Raleigh Fingers, and of course Paul Molitor, who would be here but is managing the Twins, brings back countless members. Robin, Raleigh, and Molly represented the Brewers in so many ways. Robin, of course, spending his whole career with the Brewers. You three were more than just players to me in the city of Milwaukee and the state of Wisconsin. You are forever etched in the minds of Brewer fans. And I must say, you are forever etched in the journey of my life. In many ways, baseball has been my life. I got into baseball 53 years ago for the simplest reason of all. I wanted to bring Major League Baseball back to my hometown. I made it my mission, my quest, and I devoted 5 long years in a relentless effort. We would try and we would fail. We would try and we would fail. And we would try and we would fail. But we never quit. And that day when the Brewers arrived, March 31st, 1970, will forever be one of the proudest days of my life. I was able to do something I loved every day with great passion. I loved the baseball life. I loved living and dying with each game. I loved watching players come in as nervous rookies and grow and mature to become winners in all sorts of ways and to take their place on this stage. I loved getting to know everybody, the field managers, ticket managers, players, scouts, sports writers, and of course the fans. And by the way, I love that the Brewers flourish today under the great care of Mark Antanasio. The Brewers and their fans throughout Milwaukee and Wisconsin are in very, very good hands. I not only learned every aspect of the operation of a club, I learned about the myriad issues confronting the game. In September of 1992, after 23 years of running the Brewers, I was asked to become chairman of Major League Baseball's executive council, in effect to be the interim or acting commissioner, yet I saw it only as a temporary assignment. I was sure it would last only 2 to 4 months. Baseball's issues in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s were troubling. We were a game divided. Everywhere you turned, there was rancor and adversity. Big markets versus small markets, American League owners versus National League owners, worst of all, owners versus players. We were a game truly stuck in neutral. Success came from working together. The unprecedented success we've achieved over these past 25 years has come from ending the divide, from building harmony, from working as one for the good of the game. The role of the commissioner has dramatically changed from its early days. You have to build consensus. You have to persuade people to do what is good for the game. Baseball is an institution that has been in our culture like few others. Because of this fact, baseball has been historically resistant to change. We needed a new economic system. Baseball's economics have not changed since the 1930s, but the forces operating within this system had been transformed. The perpetual reserve rule was replaced by arbitration and later free agency. The advent of cable injected new revenue into the game and increased disparity. The economic system from the 1930s could not handle these changes, and it became an anachronism. We needed to restore hope and faith to fans of every team, not just the ones who played in the largest cities. We went through a terribly painful period to institute a new economic system. The 1994 strike was the most painful experience of my life. I began to experience what Harry Truman meant when he said, "The buck stops here." I experienced that during the strike. I experienced it again later when it became apparent that the players' use of performance-enhancing substances was undermining the integrity of the game. I can tell you that having the buck stop at your desk is not necessarily a good feeling, but it is a responsibility that comes with positions of leadership. Ultimately, we did bring about economic reformation, and it has benefited the players, the clubs, and the fans. Working together, we created substantial revenue sharing amongst the clubs, taxes designed to reduce payroll disparity, and debt rules designed to promote financial stability. As a result, every single major league team has played October baseball since 2001, and hope and faith have been restored. We desperately needed a drug testing program, and we had to work together to get it done. While the process was more difficult and time-consuming than I would have liked, in the end, baseball and the Players Association developed a program that is the gold standard for sports and business alike. We needed labor peace, and we have made agreements that ensure at least 27 years of labor peace through 2021. I don't know that any of us could have foreseen such harmony after the decades of anger and discord that preceded these. I cannot leave the topic of labor without saying a word about a special individual, Michael Weiner. Michael was a man of principle, a man of intellect, and a man of vision. The progress we made in labor would not have been possible without him, and his death was certainly way too premature. I've long been inspired by the words of George Bernard Shaw, who wrote, "You see things and you say why, but I dream things that never were and I say why not." And by working together, working in harmony, we were able to grow the game with more innovations than we ever had. We are at the forefront of the technological revolution, creating Major League Baseball Advanced Media, or BAM for short. It's one of the greatest stories in American business. It has dramatically improved the way our fans all over the world can enjoy baseball. These have been wonderful innovations for our fans. They would not have been possible without the leadership of Bob Bowman at BAM and Tony Petitti at the MLB Network. Nor could any of these accomplishments have taken place without the brilliant work, ideas, and trust of people in our office like Pat Courtney, Dan Hallam, Bob Starkey, and all of the dedicated people in the offices of Major League Baseball. I owe so much to so many friends, many of whom are here today, many owners and executives that have made great contributions to so many areas of our game and who are responsible for the success that we have had. I wish I could name you all, but you know how much your presence here today means to me. And again, I want to say I really wish I could name all of you who are here, and there are a lot of them, but I deeply appreciate it. I want to thank some people who are no longer with us. The late Detroit Tiger owner John Fetzer was a mentor. He taught me early on that if you do what's in the best interest of the game, no matter how painful, no matter how unpopular at the time, all related parties will benefit. And the game will as well. It has been a key to our game's success. I also dearly loved Carl Pohlad, owner of the Minnesota Twins. And yes, as I stand here today, I miss George Steinbrenner. We never agreed on anything in 40 years, but we remained great friends through the entire time. And I must say, he was incredibly cooperative during my tenure as commissioner. I also miss one of the dearest friends I ever had in baseball, the late Bart Giamatti. He had so much wisdom and passion for the game. He so often said that baseball is a metaphor for life, and that is true. It is also true that baseball is a social institution with social responsibility, and it is in that area where I am most proud of the role baseball has played. The beginning of World War II, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt urged Commissioner Kennesaw Mountain Landis to keep playing baseball. He said Americans would be working harder and longer than ever before, and that baseball would provide respite from the daily news of war. In that same way, I'm proud of the role baseball played in our nation's recovery from the terrorist attacks of September 11th, 2001. Our players did magnificent work in assisting recovery efforts and providing the families of victims with whatever measure of comfort they could. We did something beautifully American. We played baseball. We steered the conversation at least for a couple hours a day to games, pennant races, and an unforgettable World Series with our nation's leader, the President of the United States, standing proudly and courageously on the mound in Yankee Stadium. The World Series was a great American spectacle that had as much positive sociological influence as anything I've seen in my lifetime. Baseball, in its small way, helped this country heal. 2001 was a reaffirmation that baseball is a social institution with social responsibility. The social responsibility is why we now honor Jackie Robinson every April 15, why we retired his jersey number 42 in perpetuity. His breaking of baseball's color line did not change a sport, it changed our country. April 15, 1947 remains the single most important day in baseball history. Jackie will live in our hearts forever, and Rachel and Sharon and David Robinson have carried Jackie's torch for the last half century. Their contributions through the Jackie Robinson Foundation have opened doors for hundreds of young people to attend college, as you heard yesterday from Rachel. In an effort to continue Jackie's legacy, baseball has created programs like the Diverse Business Partners Program, which has funneled tens of millions of dollars to minority and women-owned businesses. We've embraced the responsibility of providing playing opportunities to diverse populations in underserved areas through reviving baseball in the inner cities and MLB academies that we continue to open around the country. The MLB academies are a special point of pride. They not only provide great baseball instruction, but they also have tutoring and mentorship programs and make sure young people understand there are many careers in baseball. We prepare them for front office positions, broadcasting jobs, opportunities in every area from scouting to groundbreaking. We created the C-League rule to diversify our game on the field in the front office, and I was proud when other sports followed. I wanted to thank also Frank Robinson for the key role he has played in this and many other areas. He did remarkable work. It is essential that everyone in our country and everyone in the world have the opportunity to discover the joys of baseball. Our sociological impact has transcended our sport. We partnered with the Entertainment Industry Foundation to create Stand Up to Cancer. We created our Welcome Back Veterans Program, and we have enjoyed a great relationship with Habitat for Humanity and many other philanthropies. The impact of baseball on our society, from Jackie Robinson to the major leagues, who come from no less than 16 other countries today, has been a remarkable, absolute achievement, and we are very, very proud of that. Today, I am enjoying a new chapter in my life. I've always dreamed of being a history professor, and after this long and wonderful detour in baseball, my dreams have come true. I now teach the history of baseball and American society since World War II. Yet I never dreamed that I would play such a role in the history that I teach. I teach at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, my alma mater, as well as Marquette Law School and Arizona State University. The students are wonderful, smart, curious, they infuse me with energy. And then at night, I still find myself in front of a television set watching every baseball I can. It really has been a remarkable journey. One day a few years ago, Henry Aaron and I were walking back to our hotel in Washington, D.C. And he said to me, "Who could have imagined when we met back in 1958 that one day I'd break Babe Ruth's record and you'd be the commissioner of baseball?" Yes, this really is an overwhelming day in every way. I will be forever grateful to my wife, Sue, for joining me on this journey for the past 40 years. She has been an extraordinary partner and helpful in every way. And to my daughters, Sari, Wendy, and Lisa, along with those five granddaughters, and my new great-grandson, are a constant source of love and joy. I was blessed to have extraordinary parents. It was my mother, Marie, who nurtured my love of baseball. A passionate fan, she took me to games in Milwaukee, Chicago, New York, and Boston. It was a great way to grow up. My father, Benjamin, loved baseball as well. He taught me so much about business, about values, and about always trying to do the right thing. If they were here today, I know they'd be proud of this journey. As a kid, I read the newspapers, studied box scores, memorized statistics, dreamed the dreams that little boys dream. And on my last night as commissioner, I gave a speech at the New York Baseball Writers' Dinner. And I said, this really off the top of my head at the end, what you've seen here today are a little boy's dreams that came true. Thank you for this magnificent honor.
Now for the clubhouse conversation.
You gain a lot of confidence when you come up and you have success quite quickly. So it gives you the mindset of I belong here and I can do it as long as I'm doing the things that I should be doing before and after starts.
The last couple of days I've been coming out of the bench in the 8th, 9th inning and you know, get it, just one at bat and just don't try too much, just put a good at bat.
Whenever I hunch over, the top of my helmet will look into the first base dugout, and it's hard to hit like that. And that's pretty much the only thing he's really noticed that I need to work on, is stand tall in my upper body.
And we're joined by one of the newest members of the Brewers in right-handed reliever Anthony Swarzak. Make your Brewers debut last night. What were the emotions like as you came out and took the mound for the first time?
It was a pretty hectic experience, you know. It didn't go as smoothly as I would have liked, but, you know, the fans were great. The place was loud. Atmosphere was just electric. And, you know, it's exciting to see that, and I'm excited to see what else we have around the corner.
Kind of unique, too, because your last appearance with the White Sox was against the Cubs, so you're seeing them again in your first appearance with the Brewers. Does that make it any more challenging?
Yeah, it made it a little more challenging. You know, you don't want to try to do stuff you're not comfortable with or try to outthink the hitter, but, you know, their lineup could be real potent at times, so you want to try to stick to your strengths and not miss over the plate. And unfortunately, last night I missed over the plate a few times, but we got through it and the team got a win, and that's the most important thing.
Big part of your role after you give up the home runs, be able to put that behind you and get the next couple of outs and keep the lead, and you were able to do that. What do you credit that to, being able to move on from something like that?
I credit the defense. I mean, you know, we had a great play down the line there, you know, catching that fly ball in foul territory. And, you know, after that, it was just kind of make pitches and see what could happen. It was a tight ball game, so you don't want to make too many mistakes out there. And, you know, when you do make a mistake, you got to rely on your defense to pick you up. And they picked me up last night.
What did you say to Travis Shaw when the inning was over?
I told him that was an incredible play. It really was. It was incredible. He picked me up. He really did.
What's been your impression now? You've been around this club for a couple of days and getting settled in. What has been your impression of this baseball team and the clubhouse and the environment?
Everybody's friends. You know, everybody gets along. Everybody's pulling for each other. And I know that's kind of a cliche thing to say, but it really happens here. Feels like a family, and they've been very welcoming, and I feel pretty comfortable as of now. So we'll see what happens.
Is it a challenge when you make the move over, working with new catchers, and do you spend some extra time with Pena and Bandy to get on the same page?
Yeah, I think that you know, you got to spend a little time talking about this and that, but you can't substitute game situation. You know, you can't practice that. It just is what it is. So the more we get in games together and work together, I think the more everybody's going to be on the same page. I mean, I only throw two pitches, so it won't be too difficult.
We talked with Craig Counsell a little earlier on the pregame show, and we were discussing your MLB debut and Craig Counsell being a part of that. Have you guys had a chance to talk about it? He mentioned that you might have talked a little bit about it last night after the game.
Yeah, we talked about it briefly after the game, and it's pretty ironic, you know. Kind of goes full circle, and the Brewers have always had a special place in my heart just from that game, you know, your first start in the big leagues. And you know, it went well for me, and now here I am almost, you know, oh man, almost 8-9 years later. So
getting a chance to be a late inning guy, you know, and you're having your best year of your career this year. Was there a point 3-4 years ago where you weren't sure if you were going to be able to be a high leverage guy, get that kind of an opportunity in a playoff run nonetheless?
I always knew that I had it in me. I never doubted myself, but you know, you get to a certain point where you just don't know if the opportunity is gonna be there for you. I wasn't sure about that, but I knew that I was going to continue to work hard and continue to take the ball every day and do the best I could in the moment, and now here we are.
I'm sure, you know, you had a lot of friends over in that White Sox clubhouse that you left behind when the trade was made, but nice to be a part of a playoff run at the same time.
Oh, I'm nothing but happy. You know, I cherish my days with the White Sox. I have a lot of good memories there. But, you know, life goes on, and you got to turn the page and, you know, move toward the goal that we all play this game for, and that's to win a World Series. And I want to do that here in Milwaukee.
Anthony, we appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Checking in on the farm.
As we go down on the farm, we begin in AAA, where Colorado Springs 64-42 through Monday's games after a win at Las Vegas on Sunday. Taylor Youngman continues to pitch well. He went 5 innings, 7 hits, and 3 earned runs, picking up yet another win in the contest. And the Sky Sox getting some really good play right now from Mauricio Dubon, who has been playing outstanding, especially at the plate. He's collected multiple hits in 10 of his last 15 games, batting .357, 13 runs, 7 doubles, 3 home runs, and 13 RBI, 4 stolen bases as well in that span. In the month of July, Dubon's 31 hits ranked 2nd in the Brewers system. Sky Sox playing very good baseball right now. Brett Phillips has gone back down, and he went 3-for-4 on Sunday with 3 runs scored and a double. Double A Biloxi is 16-21 in the second half. They went 36-33, of course, in the first half of Southern League play. They got a win on Sunday over Jacksonville by a score of 3-2. Troy Stokes Jr. has been promoted from Class A Advanced Carolina and right away went to work with a double in Sunday's contest for the Shuckers. The Shuckers getting very good pitching performances. Aaron Wilkerson has been tremendous. He was, of course, a week ago the Southern League Pitcher of the Week. They've gotten good performances out of John Perrin on the mound. Luis Ortiz has been pitching very well for them also. And, of course, Corbin Burnes and Freddie Peralta, two of the Brewers' better pitching prospects on the mound, have all performed very well so far over the last couple of weeks. In Class A Advanced Carolina, the Mudcats sitting at 19-19 in the second half. Monte Harrison has been on fire, tied a season high with 3 hits on Sunday, including a double, and then a couple of home runs, his 17th and 18th of the season. Those came on Monday night for Monte Harrison. Class A Wisconsin, the Timber Rattlers, 17-20 in the second half. They have been playing very good baseball recently, and in large part due to Keston Hira, the 2017 first-round draft pick of the Brewers, has been absolutely on fire. He has reached base safely in all 26 games as a professional through Monday's action, batting .423, 25 runs, 8 doubles, 7 triples, 4 home runs, 25 driven in. Since joining the Timber Rattlers, Hira has hit safely in all 12 contests, going 20-49, 7 runs, 5 doubles, 2 triples, and 7 RBI. And the Timber Rattlers, one of the younger teams in the Midwest League, playing very good baseball right now. The Helena Brewers in the Pioneer League are on their All-Star break currently, and 3 players have been named to that All-Star team. Right-handed pitcher Nelson Hernandez, infielder Dallas Carroll, and right-handed pitcher Parker Bean, all named to the Pioneer League All-Star game. The Helena Brewers finished the first half at 15-23, and they are actually 1-0 in the second half, one game already into the second half, even though now they're in their All-Star break. And in the Arizona League, the Arizona League Brewers, 19-8 in the first half. They clinched the Central Division first half championship. They're now 20-9 overall, and Tristan Lutz has been very good. He was, of course, 34th overall pick this past year in the draft, and he's batting .295, 12 runs, 4 doubles, 3 triples, 3 home runs, and 11 RBIs for Tristan Lutz. All right, that's looking down on the farm. Let's see what's coming up.
Here's what's on tap.
Well, the Brewers are back in town next week for a big 7-game homestand at Miller Park featuring rivalry matchups against the Minnesota Twins, the Reds, and then, of course, the Pirates. Brewers and Twins series, it's that annual border battle between interleague rivals. Starts Wednesday, August 9th, 7-10. Thursday, August 10th, at 7-10 as well. It's a cooler backpack night on Thursday, the 10th. First 10,000 fans receive a Brewers cooler backpack. And the Bearded Brewer IPA is on tap as well. Official tapping of the special craft beer created by Eric Thames, Corey Knabel, and Oliver Drake. Special ticket package includes Bearded Brewer sample plus commemorative pint glass as well. So a lot of stuff going on those first couple of games of that homestand. And then, of course, the Red Series, Friday the 11th. It's a free shirt Friday. First 20,000 fans receive a Brew Crew performance t-shirt. Saturday the 12th, that's Negro League's tribute game. Brewers will wear special Milwaukee Bears uniforms. Special ticket packages include high top socks. And Sunday the 13th, that's going to be a big one. It's a 110 Bob Uecker 8-Ball. All fans receive a Bob Uecker 8-Ball, a one-of-a-kind fortune-telling device featuring a variety of Eucharisms as the answers. And then, of course, finishing up that series, or that homestand, rather, with the Pirates series, Tuesday the 15th and Wednesday the 16th, couple of games against the Pirates. Kids and seniors discount down Wednesday the 16th, that game at 1:10 p.m. Kids 14 and under, seniors 60 and above, save 50% on tickets. Call 414-902-4000 or visit brewers.com for tickets. Okay, that's going to do it for us in this week's edition, episode number 93 of Brewers on Tap is in the books. We'll talk to you again next week from the road. Join us then. I'm Lane Grindle.